Roman 3, paragraph A. What an interesting case. Last minute estate planning, using almost every toolbook in the book, in the tool in the book, toolbox, was very badly handled. In this estate of Moore, 88-year-old Moore owned, quote, a thriving and very lucrative farm in Arizona. As he entered old age, he began to think about selling the farm. He entered a negotiation with a neighboring farmer, then a crisis struck. Oops, congestive heart failure. Moore, told that he had 6 months to live, was released from the hospital and entered hospice care. Then, said the court, he began to pursue the plan his estate. He set out a list of planning objectives, which included, quote, a wish to maintain control of my assets during my lifetime, end of quote. My goodness, wait a minute. He's receiving hospice care and he wants to maintain control. And, quote, reduce or eliminate estate taxes if possible. 4 days after being discharged from the hospital, Moore created living trust, charitable lead annuity trust, children's trust, management trust, irrevocable trust, and a family limited partnership. So to recap, said the court, Moore created a total of 5 trusts and an FLP in 1 day. Shortly after completing negotiation for selling the farm for $16.5 million, he died 3 months later at age 89. Interesting, sad set of facts. Moore died in 2005. The petition protesting the deficiency filed in 2009. Trial held at the tax court in 2012. Tax court decision filed April 2020, 15 years after Moore died and 7 years after the trial hearing. The family finally knew what the results were in the case. The tax court opinion is 56 pages long and is very complicated. It's a mildly interesting case because there was a rather colorful family involved. It raises some interesting issues, but I don't know how to try to summarize it in this short time, nor do I think it's worth it. However, if you're interested, Steve Akers and Ron Aka from Bessemer Trust have a very detailed description and discussion of every issue. But here were the issues, top of page 3. The full value of the farm was included with Moore's gross estate under C note, section 2056A1. He transferred the farm to Living Trust and then 1/5 of his interest to an FLP in exchange for a 95% LP interest. He then entered into a contract for sale of the farm. The sale agreement permitted him to continue to live on and operate the farm until he died, which he did, a classic case for application of section 2036A. So we got a transfer with a retained life estate. He sold his FLP interest in the irrevocable trust, taking a 53% fractional discount for lack of control, lack of marketability, which all, by the way, turned out to be irrelevant as the court essentially valued the assets as though the estate plan did not exist. There were no legitimate and significant non-tax reason for creating FLP. Here's the list. Creditor protection, not a genuine concern. No bargaining in setting up the FLP. He dipped into partnership assets for living expenses. After the FLP startup meeting, they never met again to discuss the FLP. The management trust, with 2 children as trustees, was the general partner, but Moore continued to exercise control over the assets. Quote, the whole plan had a testamentary essence, end of quote. The estate contended that the bona fide requirement was satisfied by, quote, the desire to consolidate marketable assets and manage them as a family asset for the continuing best purpose. Wait a minute, the court pointed out. Moore sold the Moore Farms 5 days after transferring 4/5 of the farm to the FLP. This means, as a practical matter, there was no farm to manage. The only assets left in the FLP for Moore's children to manage were liquid, and they didn't actually manage them. $2 million at paragraph E were still going. $2 million transferred to children in exchange for promissory notes were actually gifts. A formula bequest and transfer to the CLAP was not recognized for charitable deduction purposes, reducing the charitable deduction from $4.7 million to $500,000. No deduction allowed for the $475,000 attorney's fees, because it was not shown what portion of the fees were incurred in administration. Now, I think it's fair to say, other than the above, the estate plan was very well thought out and very well executed. Now, Here's a shocker for you. If the grantor of a grant dies during the grant term, the assets are includable in the grantor's estate under Section 2036. I can only say it's kind of interesting that the taxpayer chose to spend time and effort to go to the tax court and then to the Ninth Circuit on what's destined to be a losing case. Here, the grantor transferred a 50% interest, partnership interest to a grant in exchange for a 15-year annuity. She died 14 years and 9 months later. Had she lived for three more months, or if she had selected a 14-year term, the assets would have been excluded from her gross estate. But that did not happen. And under these circumstances, they paid $11 million in estate taxes, and then they saw another attorney. Wait a minute. I think we can beat a Section 2036A1 inclusion. And here's what the estate argued. When you read Section 2036, transfer with a retained life estate, the word annuity no longer appears. The trustee is required to pay an annuity, which might include the return of principal as well as income. Well, that's all true, said the tax court and the Ninth Circuit, but it doesn't matter. Every asset, the interest she transferred into that trust, she retained an economic benefit from the asset transferred. And with an opinion that gives an extensive review of the history of Section 2036A1, gross estate inclusion. That's enough of that. Let's go on to page 4 and talk about Section 2041.